from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. This morning in the Rose Garden, President Bush announced his nomination of Florida Republican Congressman Porter Goss to head the CIA. The announcement follows George Tenet's June 3rd departure as CIA chief and two heavy months of criticism of U.S. intelligence and the CIA for failures before 9/11 and the Iraq War. Congressman Goss is chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. Amid loud calls for reform of America's intelligence institutions, the president said Goss is the man for the job.
I'm pleased to announce my decision to nominate Congressman Porter Goss as the next director of the Central Intelligence Agency. Porter Goss is a leader with strong experience in intelligence and in the fight against terrorism.
The announcement sparks a debate over whether Goss, a former CIA agent and longtime politician, is the right choice to remake the agency. Tonight on Point, we're asking, who is Porter Goss? We begin in Washington with a closer look at the congressman and reaction in the Beltway to his nomination. Bob Drogon covers intelligence and national security for the Los Angeles Times. Bob, thanks for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
So here's Bob Drogon. Grew up in Waterbury, Connecticut, went to Hotchkiss Prep School, went to Yale, majored in ancient Greek, and then joined the CIA. What do we know about his career in the CIA?
Well, that's Porter Goss. I'm Bob Drogon.
I'm sorry.
The question now really is whether Porter Goss is part of the solution or part of the problem to the CIA. He has been head of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence for the last 7 years. So he essentially overlapped with George Tenet's tenure during the 9/11 period, during the bombings and the nuclear tests in India, the war in Iraq. And the question is, I think for a lot of people here in Washington, is whether he's been too close to it and whether the oversight has really functioned in a serious way here or simply let the CIA do what they want.
He hasn't always been on good terms with Tenet. He wrote a critique of the CIA, or his committee did, criticized the CIA for ignoring its core mission. George Tenet wrote back saying that Goss's criticism was ill-informed and frankly absurd. Doesn't sound like the loving cup there.
Well, that was at the very, very end, and it was very odd at the time because, in fact, until then, Porter Goss was really the sort of the last man who still defending the CIA, both on the weapons, purported weapons in Iraq, and on their role in the 9/11. And that was a real turnaround for Porter Goss. At the same time, you may recall, he stood up on the House floor and held up a sign that castigating John Kerry. So, one of the issues here is, frankly, he could well be the shortest, if he is confirmed in the Senate, have the shortest tenure of any member, anyone who's ever served in that job, because if John Kerry is, in fact, elected, presumably he'll want to put his own man in.
Just a little bit of his biographical, his background. He was nearly 10 years in the CIA, we're told, undercover assignments. In the Florida Straits, where he said he had some pretty interesting moments, in Haiti, the Dominican Republic, Mexico, Western Europe. Is anything known publicly about what his role was in the CIA?
He was a member of the clandestine service, and so there are limits to what we know. He ran agents. He had spies working for him. He did photo reconnaissance work. He only quit, and he was sort of on a fast track as far as we know. He was in London, which is obviously a very major station for that.
Wow.
He only quit because he got sick at the end.
And that's an interesting story as well. 1970, hospitalized in Washington, a massive staph infection of his heart and other organs. Illness put him in a wheelchair, and he ended up retiring from the CIA and moving to Sanibel Island off Florida's Gulf Coast, a kind of a haven for retired CIA people.
So it seemed. Also, apparently, a haven for Republicans. It has the highest number. That Lee County has the highest number of Republicans anywhere in Florida, at least in percentage terms. So he and some of his CIA buddies established a newspaper down there, and got involved in local politics. And in 2 years' time, he was mayor of the area. And in a few years after that, he sold the newspaper and made apparently a potload of money, millions of dollars. And soon after that, the governor, who was a Democrat, Bob Graham, picked him to be a member of the county commission, and that seemed to be the launching pad to go into Congress.
1988, ran for Congress and won. Now he's had a quite a long career there. What's his reputation? If he should take over the helm of the CIA, what kind of politician, what kind of man is this?
Well, you know, he hasn't had to really run a bureaucracy before. He's barely had to run elections. I mean, once he got elected into Congress, he ran unopposed for most of his subsequent elections. You know, he's a taciturn man. I think he's liked in Congress. He's not given to grandstanding. He tends to be policy-oriented, thoughtful. He's, you know, got a reputation as someone who tends to go off on tangents, I think. You know, easygoing kind of guy, fairly approachable for reporters, but doesn't say very much.
And what has his response overall been to the calls for reform of the intelligence agencies? We saw him warning not to go too fast with legislation. He said legislation adopted in haste could wreak havoc if we get it wrong, so we aren't going to go there. Has he been dragging his feet on the 9/11 Commission recommendations?
Well, the Democrats, will, I assume, will question him on that when he gets up for the Senate confirmation hearings. You know, whether anyone can do this job is really the broader question, whether anyone can step in at this point and reestablish some kind of stability there is really the challenge, and especially doing it during a political season like this is going to be tough.
Let's say that there is a second Bush administration. Is Porter Goss a candidate to be the National Intelligence Director that President Bush said is a recommendation he will adopt from the 9/11 Commission in his own fashion?
Well, if he is, then it remains to be seen whether that's a job he would want, because at least as proposed, it's not the kind of job that Porter Goss would have previously supported, because the job that the White House has proposed does not have the budget authority. So in some ways it's less powerful, if you will, than the CIA director job. And Goss has been very open over the years, frankly, that he wanted to be the head of the CIA. So my guess is it's more likely that if there is a second Bush administration that Goss would stay as in charge of the CIA and he would have someone else as the advisor to the president.
And what about today? We read retired Admiral Stansfield Turner, CIA chief during the Carter administration, calling this a bad day for the CIA, saying this is the worst appointment that's ever been made to the office of director. His criticism being, and others have made this today, that he's a politician. It would, by necessity, bring politics into the office of the head of the CIA as if they haven't been there already. What's the word on that in Washington?
You know, I saw the Stansfield Turner quote, and I'm sort of at a loss. You know, it is anyone who comes out of Congress by definition is going to be partisan, and Goss has been relatively not viewed in those terms until fairly recently. His tenure on the House Intelligence Committee was seen as relatively bipartisan until the last year or so, and especially that speech that you mentioned earlier, where he stood up and he really castigated Kerry by name and has really challenged the Democrats on a stronger level than he had before.
Well, Bob Drogon, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
Bob Drogon covers intelligence and national security for the Los Angeles Times. He spoke with us from Washington. We are looking tonight at President Bush's new nominee to head up the CIA, Congressman Porter Goss. Do you see a reformer in the one-time agent-turned-congressman? And does the Goss nomination signal a determination to change or more of the same in U.S. intelligence? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Washington is Kevin O'Connell, Director of the Intelligence Policy Center at the RAND Corporation there. Kevin O'Connell, thanks for being with us tonight.
You're welcome. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening. And with us from Colorado is Robert Baer, a 20-year veteran of the CIA and former Middle East station chief. He's author of Sleeping with the Devil and See No Evil, the True Story of a Ground Soldier in the CIA's War on Terrorism. Bob Baer, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me.
Kevin O'Connell, first to you. It's a job that's going to get a lot of attention, given the way George Tenet left and given all the calls for reform of American intelligence. You've watched intelligence and Porter Goss for a long time. What do you make of the nomination?
Well, I think it's actually a pretty good nomination in as much as Porter Goss has all of the right ingredients to do the job. I'd like to start by giving him the benefit of the doubt. Certainly, he understands both the culture and the organizations of the Central Intelligence Agency, both firsthand as well as from his tenure on the Hill. Secondly, he obviously has the confidence of the president. And then lastly, he does understand how Congress oversees the intelligence function of this government. And that's a critically important role for any new director to have, to understand the kinds of resources that are necessary, the authorities that are necessary. And as I said, I would give Porter Goss more of a chance than perhaps than Bob did.
We'll hear more about that. Bob Baer, what's your sense? You spent 20 years in the CIA. You know what it's like to work under one kind of chief and another. You may even know Porter Goss. What's your sense of this nomination?
I know him personally, and I like him. He is friendly. He's discreet. He is, solicitous of opinion of people in the CIA, and I think he's well-respected in the CIA. But I don't see him as a reformer. And at this point, the CIA needs to be reformed. We have to look at the track record over the last 3 years, September 11th, weapons of mass destruction, how far off they were. And frankly, the place needs a good house cleaning. And I don't see that Goss, whatever he wants to do, has that mandate right now. And I look at the Goss appointment almost as catch-up ball from the White House to appoint a director because we're under this Qaeda threat.
Catch-up ball, so they'll have someone in there, not the interim director, sitting there. If something goes wrong, they can say, we appointed a good man, and he's at the helm.
Exactly. We moved as fast as we could, and he is good, and he does have experience as a case officer. The problem is it's a horrible bureaucracy out there at Langley, and the rest of the intelligence community still doesn't coordinate well, and it's a monster to try to get hold of. I mean, I think at this point what we need is a Patton-like director to take over the intelligence community.
As in General George Patton, someone who would really...
Not afraid of anybody.
Kevin O'Connell, how about it? Here's a guy who was not only in the CIA himself, but as everyone points out, has a long history and some fairly critical years of overseeing it, years that didn't end up too well with 9/11 and the pre-Iraq War presumptions.
Sure, Tom. I think the perspective on this has to be slightly longer than the current debate here in Washington and even around the country. On the one hand, this issue of intelligence reform is a very important one. It's something we have to pay critical attention to, not only the insiders in the intelligence community, but also the public at large. And I think we're having an unprecedented public discussion for the right reasons about the future of American intelligence. However, the listeners may think that intelligence reform is something that we've only come to since 9/11. In fact, I would argue that we have been looking and seriously studying intelligence reform as a community, even as a country, for the last decade. If there is a silver lining within the clouds of the WMD report and the 9/11 Commission report, it's that we now have the political consensus that change must take place. This is something that is recognized within the community. Bob Baer's comment that is a large bureaucracy is certainly understood, but there are a number of people inside the community that recognize that change has to take place from within as well.
That's a pretty hefty price tag, though. The 9/11 attacks and a rather miserable war at the moment with Iraq, if Porter Goss is partly responsible for us needing those blows to come to this consensus, what does that say for his leadership?
Well, I don't know that we can wholly blame him for what...
Not wholly, but he was right in there, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee.
Well, he was in there as the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, but certainly trying to effect some reform from his side of the aisle, so to speak, with the committees. It's interesting to hear the portrayal of the interaction between the congressional committees and the executive branch, because those in the intelligence business would see that it has been a fairly robust debate. It's been a discussion that has taken place over the last decade. What we have not had is the political consensus at the national level that it was time to change and within what bounds we could change. I would answer one other aspect of this, though, that's important, Tom, is that people are looking to organizational change as a panacea, changing the boxes, so to speak, in intelligence. I am worried that if we only focus on organizational change, what we will forego is the whole number of other reforms and changes that can take place, more modest perhaps in scope and size, inside the agency as it relates to personnel, as it relates to changing analysis and collection and information technology and intelligence sharing.
Bob Baer says that's going to require a General Patton. Is Porter Goss that man?
I think he's an interim director. I think Bush should probably keep him. But we're really going to need somebody strong. I left the CIA in 1997. I was impressed by a lot of people working very hard, and
hold that thought, Bob Baer. We've got to take a break. We'll be right back. We're talking tonight about President Bush's new nominee to head up the CIA, Florida Congressman and ex-spy Porter Goss. You can join the conversation tonight. Can a Washington politician take the politics out of American intelligence? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about President Bush's new nominee to head up the CIA, Florida Congressman Porter Goss. You can join the conversation tonight. Is a Cold War spy the right profile for a 21st century spy master? And does the Porter Goss nomination signal a Bush White House push for real intelligence reform? Porter Goss has urged caution in reforming American intelligence. Does that make him the right man or the wrong man for the job? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Here was Porter Goss in the White House Rose Garden this morning with President Bush.
The essence of our intelligence capability is people, and we have some wonderful Americans doing a great job. I used to be part of them when I worked for CIA. I'm very proud to be associated with them again, and I look forward to the challenges of the future.
Porter Goss in the Rose Garden this morning. Bob Baer, I had to interrupt you there at the break. Give us your thought, and then this issue. Both the president and Porter Goss raised it this morning. Not organizational change, though there were references to that, but the kind of boots on the ground or spies in the field issue that they both emphasized is indicating Porter Goss would be good at getting that done. What do you say?
Porter Goss came through the CIA when we were fighting the Soviet Union. It was a fairly simple war at that point. We knew black and white. We knew who the bad guys were. It was done fairly in a civilized way. It's a new war out there. His experience in the CIA is going to be helpful, but he's really got to move fast once he gets into the CIA and become a manager, because you know, you've got almost 15,000 people there. The rest of the intelligence community doesn't get along, and he's run the intelligence committee on consensus and getting along with the director. Mm-hmm. But he's got to really go in and pinpoint the faults in the CIA and frankly, fire people or move them out of their jobs.
And in your view, he just may not have the temperament to do that.
I found him to be a very nice guy, very understanding,
right,
and want to get along and want to understand, almost an academic.
But you're thinking George S. Patton, a different cut of cloth. Bob Baer, Kevin O'Connell, stand by. I want to welcome one more voice into our conversation. Roger Handberg joins us from Tampa, Florida. He's professor of political science at the University of Central Florida, a longtime observer of American security issues, and Porter Goss's political career, of course, based there in southwestern Florida. Roger Handberg, thanks for joining us tonight.
You're welcome. I'm happy to be here.
It's great to have you. So you heard this announcement along with all the rest of us. You know Porter Goss pretty well. What's it left you thinking?
Well, I think that the president seeking political cover, as one of the individuals just said, you know, Porter Goss is an interim appointment primarily because of age. He's 65 years old. His experience is 42 years ago. I don't put him on the cutting edge of, you know, what's going on. He's been in a legislator, but he's not been an executive. And that's a big difference. And I don't know that translates. You run your congressional office, but no one really pays attention to it if you've got a good staff. But he's going to have to make changes. And I think his biggest problem is going to be Rumsfeld isn't going anywhere. And Rumsfeld, the one who, over since 1998 at least, has driven the intelligence community in terms of forcing them to think and do and look at things that may, you know, from a different perspective than they were doing.
So he hasn't had the executive experience, but you've seen him in Congress and there in Florida. Does he have the kind of earth mover personality that could get in there and make some significant reform happen, even, you know, go nose to nose with Donald Rumsfeld?
I don't think so. I mean, I think he will go in. I think he will try to rebuild morale. But I don't know that he's going to have. Now, the key question will be, who does he bring in as his staff? And that might be where you look for the action to occur, because those are the people that are going to bring the ideas in. You know, he's been part of the intelligence establishment for at least the last 7 years as chairman of the Intelligence Committee. There's a little co-optation that takes place. You have that small group of people who sit in a room with no public involvement, no press there, and they talk about things and they do things. And, you know, it's an insider kind of club, and it makes it very – and it's very difficult, though, for a congressman, because they're always thinking, well, I can't say this because I don't know how classified that is. I can't talk about this. And so I think that what happens is we don't know, but I think the evidence is pretty clear. He's not a member of the leadership of the House, which obviously would have made him impossible to appoint. He moved up based on his prior experience to be a committee chair. But I mean, he doesn't have any real stamp. There's nothing that anyone can see that he has done over his tenure.
Yeah, we've got it, Kevin O'Connell. You can hear the rap on Porter Goss here tonight, and we'll no doubt hear more of it in hearings this fall. We don't know yet how fiery those will be, but square this with your sense of here's a guy who can talk to everybody and get things done. On the other side, there's the call for a Patton-like leader, an earth mover. Square that circle for us.
Well, I think that what the outsiders want is real change. I think Porter Goss may be paralyzed a little bit because he actually knows too much. He knows too much about what can't be done. He's been told we can't do this, we can't do that.
Yeah, I've got it, Roger Hendrick. I want to put that same question to Kevin O'Connell, who's supporting this nomination. Kevin.
Well, again, I think that the value that Porter Goss brings to this role is that he has all of the ingredients to make some of these changes. I don't know much about his leadership style, as has been stated here, other than having met him personally on a couple of occasions. However, I have always found him thoughtful and as Bob Baer says, a nice guy. What he will have to do is focus, as he said in his little clip that you played at the outset, is focus on the people component of this business, because the people piece is in fact the most important piece of the intelligence business. That's going to be critical to raising morale. It's going to be critical to making change. And I think I'm hearing an assumption here that the only person that will make change or can make change in this equation is the director of the CIA. I would offer a counterargument that suggests that there are a wide-ranging number of people in the intelligence community that recognize the changes upon us and now recognize that there is, as I said earlier, there's a consensus that we will have the opportunity to change. That's not purely a philosophical argument. What it means is that the opportunity will be there to take risk, to experiment, to push for innovation and technology, to do things differently with people, and that the resources will be there to accomplish the intelligence mission in a very, very different way. I think having the insider role here that others have described as being a weakness of Porter Goss may actually serve him well here.
Is a nice guy what we need for the next director of the CIA? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Roger's calling from Hingham, Massachusetts. Hi, Roger. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks a lot for taking my call.
Yeah, sure.
I had a question for the guests that I'd appreciate a comment on. It seems in the 70s we saw sort of a defanging of the CIA, and people would say that the pendulum swung perhaps too far in limiting the ability of the intelligence agencies to utilize resources that some would say are unsavory. And now we seem to be seeing there's at least a movement to shifting in a way back to utilizing people and assets that might not have the best backgrounds. And you know, Exhibit A might be this fellow that they've put in charge of Iraq, Alawi, who I guess was a CIA asset at one point.
The Prime Minister Alawi there.
Yes, excuse me. And so was wondering how your guests would comment on the notion that now this pendulum is swinging back towards a more active interventionist CIA, and how do you do that while avoiding the abuses that occurred in the past?
We've got it, Roger. Thanks very much for your call. Bob Baer, let me put that to you. How do you put teeth back in the CIA without having it overstep its bounds? And when you think, to expand on that, when you think about the reforms most needed in American intelligence at the CIA, what comes to mind?
What comes to mind was my personal experience. In the 90s, I saw the CIA completely defanged in ways that most people don't understand. For one, the satellites were taken away from the CIA.
That's the observation from space, all that.
And they were crucial to vet sources' information. So if I had a source, let's say in Afghanistan, that said that bin Laden was living in such and such a camp, I could no longer go to my own component within the CIA and say, take a look at this camp. We'd have to go to the Pentagon, and the Pentagon may have other priorities in Bosnia or someplace, and they'd say no. The National Security Agency is a key element of the intelligence community. It falls under the Pentagon. Of course, the FBI domestic intelligence falls under another organization. So the CIA director is in fact very weak, and that's in addition to the rules that were implemented, and not just under the Clinton administration, that we couldn't be running bad guys, you know, with blood on their hands.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, in the post-Cold War world, the kind of people you need to be running are thugs and murderers in order to get inside these groups. So we have a long way to go before we can empower the CIA director.
But do you see The appointment, whoever it might be, Porter Goss or anyone else, could some powerful individual go in there and make the kind of reforms necessary? Does that even make sense now that President Bush is saying he's going to bring in a national intelligence director who would be above the CIA director?
That's going to make it worse. It's another level of bureaucracy. What we had, a DCI had plenty of powers to coordinate intelligence and the rest of it, but it was he was trumped by the Pentagon, by Dom Rumsfeld, and I have a hard time seeing Porter Goss going up against Rumsfeld in a cabinet meeting or sub-cabinet meeting and winning.
And to our caller Roger's question, you're saying you need to have even bad guys out there working in conjunction with the CIA in the tough time that we're in now. Does that mean that it's simply inevitable that a revived CIA will step over some lines of nicety? And are you saying Americans just have to get used to that?
Well, we don't have to go into and engage in practices like torture and murder, but we can find people that do have blood on their hands, that were not responsible for the crimes they've committed, yet who are willing to turn to us and give us evidence. And that's just the way the world is now. And we can still maintain a rule of law. We can still maintain a CIA that's under control and penetrate these groups. But we have to make it clear what the rules are, and right now they're not.
We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Is Porter Goss the right man for the job? What kind of person do we need at the helm of the CIA now? Steve is calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
My thought is that there's so many mistakes that have been made that anybody who comes in is going to be privy to all that information. And it really, Bush doesn't have any other option except to appoint a partisan, somebody who supports him, and someone who's not going to criticize.
Steve, you're breaking up on us, but I think I've got the gist of it. Roger Hanberg, let me bring it to you. And this was the same point that Jay Rockefeller has made. He said that Porter Goss is simply too political. And, of course, since the foul-ups in advance of the Iraq War, there's been a lot of debate about the politicizing of intelligence in the Capitol. Here you've got a Republican congressman, Senator Jay Rockefeller, saying, no, he's not opposing Porter Goss as Porter Goss, but you just shouldn't have a politician in there. What about what some describe as the corruption by politics of American intelligence? Does it matter that you've got a congressman here nominated, Republican congressman?
American intelligence has never been a virgin politically. I mean, they do compete in the budgetary and other processes. They do compete for influence in administrations, whether the director is a politician or not. I think what Rockefeller's statement was mostly in relation to Porter Goss, although it was a more general statement, because Goss has made himself clearly a partisan by attacking John Kerry on the floor of the House, so that if Kerry's elected, Porter Goss, whether he's nominated or not, he becomes a lame duck. And so that disrupts where maybe you can find someone or have someone who could be appointed to the office who might go through the process, be nominated, confirmed, and would be able to survive into the next administration, because one of the issues is going to be with Tenet's disappearance from office, with the present interim director, and now you're going to have what in effect becomes a second interim director. Change has got to start now. Porter Goss, may be able to do it. I have skepticism about that, but I think that the reality is you're going to have some continuity. You can't continue in a space of a year to have three directors of the Central Intelligence Agency. For one thing, if we do decide to develop an intelligence czar, which I don't think makes any sense, at least the way it's been discussed by the administration with no budgetary authority, then the problem becomes the CIA has got to be a big player in the part of how this is set up and how it's done. You can't just impose it on them because bureaucracies will respond to that. They'll reject it. They'll work around it. But I think, as was said earlier, and I said when I started, I think the bigger obstacle is something has to happen in the Office of the Secretary of Defense,
where so much intelligence power is now focused. Kevin O'Connell, let me put a couple of things there to you. First of all, As Roger Hanberg says, U.S. intelligence has never been exactly virginal when it comes to politics, but it seemed to be highly politicized in the advance of the Iraq War to many Americans looking on. How do you see the Porter-Goss nomination factoring into that?
Well, I think we need to distinguish a couple of things here. One is I don't believe that any of the commission reviews that have been done on the Iraqi weapons of mass destruction case have cited explicit politicization of the intelligence at the intelligence level. In essence, that there may have been mistakes made, and certainly if you understand the way an intelligence analyst and intelligence analysts do their business, very bad ground truth data in the early 90s, diminishing quality and quantity of information over the decade of the 90s, and clearly some behavior by Saddam Hussein that made no sense whatsoever, you understand why the conclusions were reached that they were. Were there mistakes made? Certainly they were. But I don't believe anybody has cited politicization of the intelligence per se to do that.
It's a concern that stands there ever since the country went to war, a war that the White House seemed to want and the CIA supported. You know, as far as the public and the world looking on, it feels like an issue. And how things look are important, I guess, when you're naming a new chief.
No, perceptions really matter. And, one might take the broader perspective, I think, is cited by David Kaye, when he said that we were all wrong, and here citing the views of many Western intelligence services as they try to consider the politics and the substance of what went on the ground in Iraq. In terms of the broader question, though, there's been a 50-year history in American intelligence of trying, as we say it in terms of a vision of speaking truth to power. One of the advantages that has been cited today of Porter Goss's nomination is that he is close enough that he may be able to go to the president and say, this is either we don't understand this fully or this is not the way it is. And if the politics deem it to go a certain direction in contravention of the intelligence, so be it. But that the intelligence will be portrayed fairly and faithfully to the leadership.
And Bob Baer, we just got a minute before the break, but what about Roger Hanberg's big question of can Porter Goss, who could take on Don Rumsfeld and the Pentagon's big sway in intelligence these days?
I think it's an impossible task. I think it's too much to ask. Rumsfeld is a key member of this administration, as we all know. Mm-hmm. Military priorities take precedence over the entire intelligence community in Iraq right now, and this is going to be a hard, hard battle. You'd have to have the president intervene directly, and I'm not sure this president wants to right now.
To intervene with this defense secretary at this moment with the war in Iraq. Bob Baer, Kevin O'Connell, Roger Hanberg, please stand by. We've got to take a short break. We are talking tonight about President Bush's new nominee to head up the CIA, Florida congressman and ex-spy Porter Goss. What do you think? Is this a relic or a reformer? Is this just a new face on the CIA and its old problems? Or can Porter Goss erase the taint of political interference in CIA analysis? Can he change American intelligence? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about President Bush's new nominee to head up the CIA, Florida congressman and ex-spy Porter Goss. You can join the conversation tonight. Does the Porter Goss nomination signal a Bush White House push for real intelligence reform? Porter Goss has urged caution in reforming American intelligence. Does that make him the right man or the wrong man for this job? And if not Porter Goss, where would you look for a new CIA chief? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined tonight by a great crew. Kevin O'Connell, director of the Intelligence Policy Center at RAND Corporation, joins us from Washington. Joining us from Colorado tonight, Robert Baer, 20-year veteran of the CIA, served as Middle East Station Chief. And from Tampa, Florida, Roger Hanberg, professor of political science at the University of Central Florida. He's watched Porter Goss's career up close right there in Central Florida. You can join the conversation as well, 1-800-423-8255. Brian is calling from Brighton, Massachusetts. Hi, Brian. You're on the air.
Hi. Wanted to just voice my opinion. I think that Goss would be a good man for the job because I think he would be somewhat of a catalyst to helping the reform to occur. I don't think the entire onus of doing the reform should be done by him necessarily at all. I think because of his history with the CIA, he understands its problems uniquely. It originally was formed to be a clearinghouse for information, and over time they got more and more into intelligence that became proactive into espionage activities, et cetera. And as a result, I think he's a go-to man to find out what to do to help fix some of these problems, because I think he knows the nuts and bolts of it.
But, Brian, if he's been watching those nuts and bolts over the years when we ended up with two crises, 9/11 and then a kind of a war on false premises in Iraq, is that a recommendation for this man?
Well, I think it's very complex that over time it became accepted that the CIA would operate in such and such a way. Then many of the tools, like some earlier caller said, were taken away from them. And so it became even more complex because, you know, it was already accepted that they do more than simply be a clearinghouse for information.
Yep, we've got it. Brian, thanks for your call. Roger Hanberg, how about it? He's an old hand. He's been in there. He knows how to make things work. He can be a catalyst, Brian says. Do you think so? And if not Porter Goss, Roger, what's the profile you would have in mind?
Well, I think that let me back it up for a second. I think that his biggest problem is going to be, if he goes through the confirmation hearings, he's going to be placed in a position of responding to questions like, you will accept the reality there's going to be an intelligence czar. Senator Schumer from New York has already made that a non-negotiable point, this whole 9/11 thing. And so I think that he may be more constrained than people see. Now, I think for his perspective, he needs to come in with his own staff. I don't know that he has access to the people that can do it, that are senior enough, credible enough, that they can come into the agency and displace some people that are there. Those people may not be fired. They may be. They may be assigned to other jobs. You know, I don't see him as a catalyst only in the sense I don't think he's going to have enough time to do anything.
Roger Hinberg, we take your point that he may well be a lame duck if the election goes to Kerry. But if what kind of people are you saying to bring in here? We know there's a vacuum there. The CIA Deputy Director for Operations, James Pavitt, has also left, not just George Tenet. So there's a lot of room at the top. Where does an incoming CIA chief turn for a new team?
What has made Rumsfeld powerful in the Department of Defense has been he brings in his crew of people, for example, who set policy.
Yep.
That's what Porter Goss is going to have to do. He's going to have to bring people in who have the ability to get clearances, which is always an issue. They're going to have the ability to come in with ideas and know, and this is where Goss may be an asset. He may know the levers, where you can do them, but he may not be able to push them very hard because he's not sure where he's going. Right now, what he's saying is cautious, incremental change. That's not what is being demanded.
Bob Baer, join us here from Colorado. Where does an incoming chief turn if he wants to bring in an all-new team for the top at the CIA? Where do you go fishing for that?
I think you're going to have to look internally, because what the CIA does is run spies. Most spies are very difficult to run. So many make-up stories. It's hard to sort through the information. It is a wilderness of mirrors. He's going to have to come in and find some honest people in the Directorate of Operations, put them in charge of the various geographical divisions, and said, I only want the truth. I want to be sure, and I want to be aggressive without being stupid. This is his best asset right now, his experience in the CIA, to sort out the nonsense from the real intelligence. The hard part for him is going to be able to go to the president and saying, listen, we don't know about certain things, like about Iran's nuclear weapons. We have limited information. We're not going to back you politically. This is what we have. This is what we're certain about. But I think, his best asset is going to be to wade through the difficulties of running the Directorate of Operations, which is the most difficult group in the CIA to run.
Right. Hard to get a harness on there. Kevin O'Connell, George Tenet was fond of saying that it was going to be a process of years to get American intelligence to where it should be, 5 years, 10 years. We don't know how long Porter Goss would have if he's confirmed by the Senate here. But if you were advising him in his first, if he comes in his first 100 days, what are the big markers he needs to lay down, the big goals, the big change vectors?
Well, Tom, there are actually a couple, and I guess I want to just say one thing before I start my answer, which is that We've talked largely about the CIA tonight as a collection agency, and Bob is right that the clandestine service is a very important part of CIA. CIA also has an extremely important analytic function, which requires its own elements of reform and change. On the one hand, we have moved away, as an analytic community, we've moved away from good analysis more to a realm of that you'll be familiar with, reporting. More people across the intelligence community are doing reporting as opposed to getting the deep understanding of our enemies that intelligence analysis really represents. And so there's an equal amount of emphasis that would have to be focused on the analytic function. I think the caller, though, was right previously, and it's that Portergas can be a catalyst for change. I think he's got to emphasize those two functions particularly, the clandestine service and the analytic function. And I think that one of the things that we have to develop quickly is a framework for change. Some of us have talked tonight about the fact that he was as part of the problem, you've phrased it, I think, at one point. And in fact, I think what we have to recognize is that even those overseeing intelligence have had their own context within which intelligence over the last decade has been seen as being less important, in some ways kind of a post-Cold War peace dividend, and they've had to deal with those realities, budget realities, et cetera, from a broader political context. We know today that intelligence is one of the preeminent tools in the war on terrorism. It is not the only tool, but it takes on much greater importance than it has in perhaps other areas. To the issue of the responsibilities in the Department of Defense, what we recognize in this is that it's probably time to think about rebalancing the portfolio of intelligence that goes not only to the Department of Defense, where there are legitimate military intelligence needs, very legitimate intelligence needs there, but also making sure there's an equal amount of emphasis and energy toward reforming the way we support our diplomatic functions and even our homeland security functions.
But do you think that Portergas has the steel, the brass, to head over to the Pentagon and rip some of that out of their hands? Pretty tough job.
Yeah. I don't know that it's simply the question of steel or arguments with Secretary of Defense. I think it's more a case of laying out a framework within which we evaluate change for the community in such a way that we ask the question, are we really improving the performance of intelligence by making this particular change, whether it be an organizational change, a technical change, any kind of change that people have thoughtfully worked their way through?
Boy, I've got to say, though, that the tenor of that perspective just seems out of whack with the very high urgency of the 9/11 Commission's requirements for reform. They're saying we need large-scale reform, and we need it urgently, and Congress is staying in town to work on it. It's got a different tone than what I'm hearing right there, Kevin O'Connell.
We agree with every single thing that you've just said, that the time to change is now. There's an urgency to change. My question is whether or not the focus only at the organizational level is appropriate given the myriad other ways we can and frankly are changing in many areas.
Greg is calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Greg, you're on the air.
Hi. I can give you two ways that Portergas has already run political cover for the Bush administration.
Okay.
First was the congressional report on the 911, where there were those 38 pages of information about the Saudis that were redacted.
Yes.
Democrats wanted to release that information. Republicans did not. Secondly, there's the Valerie Perrine scandal.
Valerie Plame and her outing as a CIA agent.
Right. The Congress has the right to ask the White House for an explanation on that. That request has been forwarded by the Democrats, but Portergas is keeping it bottled up.
Okay. There's two. Roger Hanberg, what do you say? Our caller says he's running political cover already.
Well, I mean, that was part of the understanding. I mean, he is a Republican congressman from a state that went through the unfortunate events of 2000. But I think the bigger point here that we're passing over is Portergas is an instrument. And whoever is president has got to be committed to change. And that's where I think you're going to have where the rubber meets the road. If Kerry's elected, if Bush is reelected, if neither one of them are committed to serious change, it isn't going to happen. I don't care who you put in Central Intelligence. You can put all the czars you want. Presidential leadership becomes the key here in a way because Congress will respond because they feel they have to. You know, this is like the what used to be considered non-controversial, you know, motherhood and apple pie. This is an issue whose time has come. There's a window of opportunity, but that window requires executive leadership. And see, that's where I think the question is, really the bigger question is John Kerry, if he's elected, willing to make the changes, regardless of who's the CIA director?
And presumably it wouldn't be Portagos with John Kerry.
Maybe he could work with him. He might, you know, politicians do things that aren't things, because he may say, okay, which is what the argument was when Tenet was allowed to continue in the Bush administration, we're going to let Tenet take the fall if something goes wrong.
Of course, Portagos has gone right after John Kerry explicitly on Capitol Hill. Let's get one more call here. Courtney's calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Courtney. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Can we get back to the politicization of intelligence issue?
Can't really get away from it, can we?
It seems to me that scandal that has been covered up is it really sort of makes all the rest of this discussion irrelevant. What about that report that's going to be coming out after the election? To me, that's incredible.
This is the second half of the Senate Intelligence Committee report.
How did that get pulled off?
Now, there's a good question, and that one got pushed back to after November 2nd. Courtney, thanks for raising it. Bob Baer, what about it? We're hearing some conflicting noises tonight about the degree to which politics have entered in to intelligence recently, and no, it hasn't been specifically cited in a high-profile way, but yes, our caller's right, that the second part of that Senate report has been put off until after the election.
It's worse than that. I couldn't agree more. You know, they arrested 2 years ago a Qaeda member, this guy Libby. He was in FBI custody. They were moving glacially with the guy, so the CIA took him over, so we can do it better. They used abusive interrogation techniques, and the only question they asked him was about Saddam and Qaeda and the connection and biochemical weapons. Well, eventually, under the abuse, he confessed, and as people will, and these reports were sent to the White House. This is an instance of politicization of intelligence, and all that exile reporting that ended up in the National Intelligence Estimate of 2002 should not have been there. It only ended up there because intelligence was politicized. I knew all the sources. I would have never wasted paper on sending this to anybody in Washington, and they did.
So can a CIA chief give a signal, though, from his seat in Washington that will get all the way down to that interrogation room and make a difference in the way intelligence is gathered?
You have to have a fixed appointment for a CIA chief, like the FBI director, who's going to be in the job, for instance, 5 years, can't be fired, tell the truth, speak truth to the president, and it's oversimplistic. I understand that, but that's essentially what we need.
Do you see that in Portagos?
No, not running up into these elections in November.
Can you imagine Bob Baer, President Bush, either before or after November 2nd, going out to get this national intelligence director and putting a stronger figure over Portagos that would do that, or not?
If he's got the sense to do that, you know, somebody like Norman Schwarzkopf, who understands intelligence, a general, has no second career, that would come in and clean the place and not be afraid to say what's on his mind.
Norman Schwarzkopf, that sounds like a different profile. Indeed. Kevin O'Connell, last thought from you tonight. Do you think it's going to go through? Do you think he's got the votes in the Senate?
I think it will go through. I think people will see him as sufficiently understanding of the business and the enterprise that it will go through.
And then we'll see just how long Portagos would last on the job. May depend on the election. I want to thank all of you for being with us tonight. Bob Baer, always great to have you. Thanks so much for joining us from Colorado tonight. Robert Baer, 20-year veteran of the CIA, served as Middle East Station Chief, author of See No Evil and Sleeping with the Devil, How Washington Sold Our Soul for Saudi Crude. Roger Hanberg in Tampa, Florida, thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Roger Hanberg, professor of political science at the University of Central Florida, and Kevin O'Connell at the RAND Corporation in Washington, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
My pleasure, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.